This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hi, I'm Kelsey.
I'm Kimmy.
And we're the hosts of Talk 30 Rock to Me.
Do you crave cheese late at night?
Do you have lots of thoughts on your mind grapes?
Do you think a rape whistle can double as an accessory?
Do you miss 30 Rock?
We sure do.
We miss it so much, we started a podcast about it.
New episodes every Tuesday. Subscribe today.
It's the Improv Session Podcast. It's the Improv Session Podcast. It's the Improv Session Podcast. It's the Improv Session Podcast with Steven Pearlstein.
Let's do this thing.
Okay.
How do I intro these shows? It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Improv Obsession Podcast. I'm your host, Steven Pearlstein. Today on the show, very special guest, Will Hines.
Hi, Steven.
Hi. How's it going?
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, we had a long chat, and there's always that, like, hi, how's it going thing.
Oh, yeah. But my brain can wrap around that pretty easily. How, like, we were just talking to each other, and now you hit record, and we're doing this. So
yeah.
I get that.
Cool. As long as there's not, like, a zone thing in your mind, you're ready to go.
I'm able to really totally understand what just happened.
I am, too. Currently joining our dog. My dog is here.
Yeah.
And he's just staring at Will, very interested in the
very
whole process.
Sweet. What's your dog's name again?
Grizz.
Grizz, yeah. After the 30 Rock character?
Yes, after the 30 Rock character.
Huh.
Spent 2 hours at the Lincoln Memorial just trying to come up with names for a dog with my girlfriend. We landed on Grizz, and we're like, oh, this is perfect. It's got to be Grizz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great name.
So
better than .com.
Better than .com for sure.
Yeah.
When we get another one, probably will be .com.
That's fine.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
All right. So we just talked about like what we're going to cover today.
Yeah.
Kind of just for the sake of everybody to get a context of
you,
let's just go like, who's Will?
Okay. I'm a guy. You want me just to answer that?
Yeah, yeah. Go for it.
So
are you in like comedy and like how bad?
In the improv context of things. All right. So I'm a guy who started doing UCB in 1999 in New York.
Great.
Took classes and got in a team. And once I started, I was sort of obsessed and never stopped being part of UCB and kind of like climbed up its ladders, both informal and formal.
Yeah.
Got on Herald teams and better Herald teams and got made a teacher and then eventually got put in charge of the New York school, then very briefly in charge of both coasts.
What, you did both coasts at one point?
Just for not even a year.
Okay.
When Joe Wengert stopped and Johnny Meeks took over for him,
okay,
technically I became the senior of the two coasts.
I did not realize. Okay.
Yeah. But now Johnny is senior.
Good for him.
and it rarely matters.
Yeah.
But that person breaks the ties.
Yeah.
On policy decisions.
Fair enough.
And then I moved out to L.A. in January, and so that's been like 14 years at UCB. And then over that time, also learned how to shoot and direct videos, and did a fair number of videos at a time when videos were kind of new in New York City.
Yeah,
acted in a handful of high profile web videos, as much as one can be in one of those.
Yeah, you were in BP Oil, right?
I was not actually.
Did
I feel like I should have been.
No. The other John Frusciante was.
That's right.
Yeah,
and I ran a podcast in New York,
yeah,
which introduced a lot of the New York improv people to the slightly larger UCB community, including LA.
That's,
so you're associating me with my co-host Frusciante, John Frusciante.
Yeah.
And that was understandably.
Totally, and I knew. I think I knew it was one of you.
That's
and
totally
I just took a
okay
shot.
That is the kind of video that I would have stumbled into, but I missed the golden ticket of the big hit BP Spills Oil.
That's real rough.
I'm thinking more things like Very Mary Kate, which was a college humor web series that was some that was actually, I'd say, very successful.
Yeah, very good.
Things like that. And dabbled in stand-up and doing sketch shows. I have stepped beyond UCB to some degree, although still primarily just a UCB person.
Hey, that's great.
So that's who I am.
Okay.
And now I'm out here teaching and on the smokes and doing stuff.
Yeah. Are you on... Okay.
I'm on the smokes and effed up family.
Effed up family. Okay, great. So there's Will Hines. I feel like everybody probably, if they're listening to this podcast, probably nerdy enough to know who you are. But
right.
It's important.
Because if they're into improv podcasts, they're probably listening to yours and mine from New York, at least somewhat.
Yeah. I feel like that's a safe crossover in the iTunes. It's usually ours next to each other and like Jimmy's.
Right?
And
okay, yeah, yeah. Jimmy's is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're competitive or something? Or
No, it's fine. I like his podcast. Yeah, whatever.
Have you read his book? Have you read Improvising Better?
I have.
I think that's a terrific book.
It's very good. That was
what I like about it is it's if anybody hasn't out there hasn't read it and you're an improv nerd, I highly recommend Improvising Better because it's a very lean book. You can read it in like an hour.
Jimmy Crane and somebody else.
Liz Allen.
Liz Allen, that's right.
Liz Allen, who was John Lutz's Herald team coach.
Got it.
And lots of people's Herald team coach.
Right.
Big Chicago teacher. Yeah. She might live in Las Vegas, Nevada now. I don't know. Anyway, it's a great book because I've tried to write an improv book and I'm still trying and it's hard to do.
Yeah.
And so I've read a good handful of them.
Yeah.
And they sort of fall into either like a historical one, like Something Wonderful Right Away, like history of it, or they do like inspirational, just like make, you know, kind of get you psyched up about improv, which I would
Jill
count. Jill Bernard's, I would count as
cute
that. I would
book.
Also count Truth in Comedy as that. Like,
yeah.
That is
I think
inspirational more than procedural.
And a little bit historical, too. I feel like there's a lot. We did so much.
But it's historical, I think, for the sake of inspiring you to be like, this is where it came from, so get psyched about it.
So get psyched.
And then also practical advice, which there isn't very much of, although I think improvise. By Mick Napier
Napier's
has
good.
Like direct practical advice, and the UCB book is nothing but very dogmatic practical advice.
Yeah, super dry,
but super dry and no fun, no inspiration in the UCB book, but plenty of like this is really how we do it, and I think it's an accurate depiction of what it's like to be in class with Besser or Ian.
Yeah,
who are two of the best teachers you can find? So that's something. But Improvising Better is the best of all of them, I think. I mean, it's nowhere near as ambitious as the UCB book, but it's just like two good teachers wrote down the most common notes they gave in a very articulate fashion and gave exercises that hit those notes.
It's very to the point. You can get through it, on an afternoon?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's so easy to read and so helpful.
Yeah.
It's got the highest density usefulness to page count of any book.
and
so that makes me really like Jimmy Crane.
Yeah.
And it's very, if you're an improviser and you read it, it's written by improvisers for improvisers.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
Everybody, I guess the whole point of this thing.
Yeah. It's an advertisement.
Go get
for
that book.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about then most common notes. That was a thing you just said. What's the thing that you see most often? Most common notes. I feel like we covered a lot of that
teacher?
In the class. Yeah. Teacher, coaching, Herald Night, whatever. What's that thing that most often you see go wrong?
Okay. Within the UCB world, like just top of scene not connecting with each other is maybe the most common thing. Like somebody's got a premise and it's filling up their head, and so they're not really paying attention to their scene partner while they say it.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene partner is trying desperately to jump two steps ahead of that premise as it's being said, and they just both need to drop it and look at each other and just commit to the scene a little bit better.
Yeah.
Some combination of like patience and investment and not trying to race ahead.
Yeah.
That's the most common thing I see. Like just trying to be funny too early.
Yeah.
That's one of the most common things I see. Another one is getting anytime you're checked out. So like you get a good pattern going, but then you just blindly lock into it and you're like heightening blindly.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking about each one and earning each one.
Mm-hmm.
They get artificial and fake too fast.
I get that. It sounds
that's
like
that's a common one. That's like an advanced class one.
Yeah.
Like you're good enough to get the who, what, where, find something and start heightening it, but then you're just doing it automatically.
Yeah.
And it's bad.
I feel like I both of those in a weird way. Not necessarily. speak to probably what's considered like the weakness of UCB, which is like,
oh yeah, I totally think you're right.
It's like it's game. It's like smart. They're not listening. Whatever. Right. And I feel like
yeah, you're sketch writing on your feet.
Yeah.
Instead of developing stuff with your partner.
Exactly. They're not. I feel like that's a thing that I used to get a lot too.
That is
too.
The bad side.
It was like you jumped ahead like three. I remember like a lot. My coaches would be like, "You're jumping ahead like three moves." I'm like, "Yeah, well, I know all the moves."
Yeah.
So like, shouldn't I just be?
Yeah.
Like the best one.
Right.
Like the craziest one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Surprisingly, I didn't get a good response.
Right. Ever. They didn't like that answer. Yeah.
they never liked that. I think the audience.
I used to be a computer programmer, and so I think analytically. A lot of people who do improv try to reduce it to formulas and rules. It never totally works that way.
Sure.
But, like, here's one. So a lot of improv is making lists, right? Like, you're hitting something a number of times, or you're just following a pattern a number of times.
Okay.
Right? Like, whatever. Somebody comes out who says he's baking rolls, then somebody's baking a cake, and then somebody's baking, like, a super cake or whatever.
Yeah. Wow.
But I find that the second and third person in those patterns on experienced teams, they go too far. Number two in a list should always be almost an exact copy of number one, just to lock down what number one is.
That was really interesting to me when we talked about that in class, because I also got that note several times in the class. It was like, yeah, too big. Just do almost the same thing. Let's just all kind of confirm it for each other.
Yeah, I think the second time you hit a game or a pattern or almost anything, it should just be like an almost copy of it.
Yeah.
Just to show. Because it won't be as much of a copy as you think, and you'll be helping to decide for the group which is the important part of that first move.
Yeah.
And then the third one, that's the first one that can be a little far off, but even that one, you shouldn't get – I don't think you should start getting nuts until the fourth one.
Yeah.
And then you can go – I mean, it sounds dumb to put numbers on it like that, but I think that works out a high percentage of the time.
I was thinking about that, too. I've been thinking about that more and more when I'm doing shows. Just like, well, we're about at the second one, third one. How big do I really need to go with this? Because it's also – there's also the thing, too, of it's the thing I think that's also a language problem, I'm going to guess. Heightening. Like, that's uh-huh. I think that was like a term that's great, but also like fuck things up in a way because of that.
Yeah, totally.
It's like it's just a dumb semantic thing that people are like, oh, right, bigger.
You're completely right. Like, heightening is a great term because people get the gist of it very quickly.
Yeah.
And they understand how that relates to humor, and it does.
Yeah.
So, therefore, it's a really good term.
Yeah.
But then they do oversimplify it and apply it in places and to degrees that are not helpful.
Yeah.
And heightening is not just bigger and louder.
Yeah.
Although, sometimes it is.
I'm trying to get the term to catch on. This is one that I've used.
Okay.
Feel free to spread it.
Okay.
Expand the game. Expand
the game and defend that.
I will. So I think we say heightening goes bigger. I think expand it is just like look for when I would say it's like look for more things that affects it, and you're more likely to get like if we're talking about stuff we're baking, we're heightening. We go.
I didn't give you a good example. What
cupcake,
we were heightening.
Cakes, super cakes.
Right.
And that's not this is obviously not a game. But if we're talking about just expanding things that we're baking, we're less likely. Or look more around it. I think you're looking for same level beats. I think if you think in terms of expanding, I don't know. It's just a dumb semantic thing.
What do you
think
of heighten and explore? I mean,
heighten
that's the
explore.
UCB's term that I hadn't really heard for a long time. And I feel like they developed it when they wrote their book.
Yeah.
And I'm embarrassed, but I'll be honest to say, like, I wasn't even super aware of that until I'd read the draft of the book maybe the second time.
Sure.
But anyway, heighten and explore.
Heighten and explore, I love.
That's better than just heighten.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree. Because it's also easy to, as soon as you get it, if you get a game, especially mm-hmm. young, like if you're used to not getting games.
Yeah.
And when you get one, you'll just kill it. You'll just
do
100,000 moves so fast.
You'll
beat the hell out of the game. Like, in all of the worst versions of beat the hell out of the game.
Right.
But, like, I think, yeah, so the explorer's good, but we always forget about it. And it's like, just react to it, parse it apart, make sure it's believable somehow. Like, if somebody says, trying to think of a game that I've seen recently or done recently.
Yeah, me too. When is the last time I did improv? What was funny?
I had one that was, like, basically considering calling a school play the arts. Like, taking very amateur children, thing too seriously.
Okay.
Right. So, and I just kind of stated, like, you know, I consider these the arts. And it's easy to move forward enough with that of just going, like, more things that are not arts or not, like, high art.
Right.
But justifying it a little bit or living in that beat a little bit is the expanding of it. It's like, yeah, you know, I go to the theater, you know, three nights a week, and right. I see the third graders, fourth graders, and fifth graders. You know, and it's and then challenging it as part of the exploring, right?
Right.
Like, what? Why would you think that that's part of it? Like, you know that there are professionals doing it, whatever. And, like, that gets to your justification and
right,
stuff, right?
Right, right, yeah. I think that living in it, the world that it's in, like, taking moments to live in and explore before you make your next move is really important. And it stops the scene from feeling like a really forced and arbitrary list.
Yeah.
That's what it makes you feel like you're earning each step of the way.
Right.
And the audience likes it a lot better.
Yeah.
They're more delighted when you find it within in a way that's connected to the same world, for sure.
Yeah. Drew DeFonso Marx said it, like, he has a little chart.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, if you have your time on the... Oh, God, it's been so long since I've done math. X-axis.
That's right.
And then game moves or Y-axis.
Okay.
A lot of times people do like a little curve line straight up. He's
that's
like, that's
right.
just not it. Just don't do that.
Okay.
You heighten, and then you just, it's a step. And you just lay flat and
explore. Right.
Heighten, and that's just a little bit more, and then it's just flat. Just stay on that one for a little bit. Live in that beat. Don't worry about going bigger.
I think he's exactly right.
He's a genius.
Yeah. He's very articulate dude.
He's going to come on tomorrow.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
He's great. He's a really good teacher.
He is.
Actually, I've never had him as a teacher, but just in talking to him and hearing him articulate things, it's clear that he's really...
He knows his stuff. He's good.
Yeah.
And, he's one that... I bet you, him, a lot, like, directly addressing stuff and kind of, like, weird when it goes bad. It's good.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know. Like a good teacher.
Yeah. I think the UCB's good and bad effect... on improv, the good and bad effect is that it makes you get something early and push it aggressively early.
Yeah.
And that can be bad because it can be thin and shallow and forced.
Right.
But it can be good too, because I've certainly seen more than my share of improv that goes nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's extremely frustrating.
Yeah.
And right now I'm teaching 101s again.
Great.
I moved out here, and so far this year, I've taught like a 101 and then another class, which has either been an advanced or a 401.
Yeah.
And it's super exciting and illuminating to see people learn it for the first time.
Yeah.
Because 101s, you know, it is a lot for a 101 class just to play make-believe in any kind of organized way. Like, just to be able to think of a name that isn't your own when you're doing an improv scene, you're new to it, is hard.
Yeah.
And just to be able to, like, answer the basic who, what, where, why are we doing this, just forget being funny.
Yeah.
Just, like, if you start a scene and it's in doubt that we are both, like, teachers in a teacher's lounge, just, like, what grade, what happened today is a lot for them to come up with.
Sure.
And they very commonly fall on the, this is my first day, why don't you tell me, I don't know anything.
Sure.
Because that is the first rational explanation they can grab onto as to why they don't know anything,
yeah.
And it's really interesting to watch people at this level, because all the stuff we're talking about, you throw it all out the window, or I do. Maybe other, you know, and I've actually been talking to other 101 teachers to improve my ability at this level. Mm-hmm. And to remind myself of what it's like. But so far what I've been doing is you throw anything in, but anything you can do to get them to, like, just be able to have a working scene, you do.
Yeah.
So you know, advanced students, we talk about the difference between premise and game and over-heightening and not getting too big and heighten and explore. 101, forget it. It's just sort of like, I'll say to them, the first funny thing that happens, look to do it again.
Yeah.
Like, repeat the funny thing. Like, say it again.
Yeah.
And it's all just patterns.
Yeah,
because for them that's a miracle. Because what they normally do is they get into a fight and then one of them wins.
Yeah,
or they create a problem and solve it.
Yeah,
that's all they can do, and that's a struggle.
Yeah,
and somewhere in there, within that, they're doing a lot of good improv fundamentals that you don't want to discourage.
Yeah,
but the scene is dumb.
Yeah.
Because their arc is just sort of like, wait a minute, you said this. How come you're mad at me? Maybe I'm mad at you. We'll see who wins. And it's like, no, 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 no. Just. And then so as soon as anything funny happens, you're like, do that again.
Yeah.
Like I just finished a 101 class, and they were good. You know, they're neither exceptional in neither direction. I say that in the best way.
Sure, I get it.
Like, because I've had some 101 classes where there's a lot of people who've done improv before, so that just leads the whole class. And I've had some where there's just, for whatever reason, it's a tough chemistry and it's really
just
rough.
Click. Yeah.
This is not that. This is a fine class. But, like, they'll do a scene where it's, I wish I could remember anything. Where it's. Oh, you know, yesterday I did a 401 grad class and a 101 grad class, and I did the 401 last. Now all I can remember is the 401 one. Like, my brain will only hold on to the most recent one. Well, all right. I remember one from a previous 101 class, which was like it's a DJ in a club talking to her manager.
Okay.
Off hours. And he's complaining that her DJing is, like, too aggressive. Like, she's playing music that's too aggressive.
Yeah.
And they solve the problem. She, like, agrees to play more passive music and the scene's over. And I was like, no, that the funny part is you're playing aggressive music, right?
Yeah.
So, like, do it again. Play more aggressive music. Just play, do something aggressive.
Yeah.
That's your job now in the scene. And then they'll do that. But it's very thin, and it's just blindly repeating whatever the phrase was that cued them off. But from my perspective as a 101 teacher, I'm like, that's a miracle. That's the best.
They did it.
I'm not even going to mention that they're not justifying it. I'm not even going to mention that it's not real.
Yeah.
I just need to get them doing anything close to the semblance of a comedy scene.
Yeah.
That doesn't break the rules of reality. They also just can't force stuff in there out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
And so what I'm saying is, like, you drop all your... So I hear 401 teachers and advanced teachers, and I am one, complain about, like, the bad habits that students bring into their class.
Sure.
But it's like, those bad habits, that was all they could do. They weren't good enough to do anything but bad habits.
Right.
I feel like I get an English teacher being like, every paragraph has to have a topic sentence, no matter what.
Yeah.
And then they get into an advanced level class, like, my teacher told me the topic sentence has to be the first sentence.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's stupid. It's like, it wasn't stupid when that student was dumb. That student was dumb. Like, that's all they could do.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just talked a lot.
No, it's good.
101 versus advanced is really interesting because you go back to the most reductivist, simplest version of the rules. This is what I want to say. At that time, I'm glad for UCB because we pushed them to do something.
Yeah.
Otherwise, nothing happens. And it's really frustrating to watch.
It's interesting. I feel like you have to, I spent a lot of time coaching a very young team and kind of trying to build them up over time. And I kind of felt like I did the same thing. I was like, all we're really going to do is just get you confident on stage.
Yeah.
I'm not even, like, scenes, whatever. All it's going to be is just, like, confidence and, like, fake boasting. And, like, I'm going to tell you every scene's great. Good job. Like, that's kind of where
necessary.
I started. And then it's like, okay, and then we're going to try to build onto it, like, doing things again, starting to look at what game looks like so that when shit goes wrong, because it always does, it's like you'll at least look confident. You'll at least look
it's
like you're supposed
thing.
To do it.
I just was talking with Zach Woods. Maybe that's name droppy, but it's also true about teaching. And he was saying, and I think he's right. He's like that the emotional, I'm going to get his words exactly not, I mean, somewhat wrong because he's good at talking and I forget exactly, but it's something like the emotional tenor of the classroom is paramount. Like the ability of the classroom to create in its students a feeling of confidence is maybe the most important thing.
Yeah.
like just and I think he was talking about his own teaching that he had been a very harsh and strict teacher, which is true, and that he was saying he would do it a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Because he's taking a lot of acting classes now. And it's like you're looking just to find a version of yourself that is confident and strong.
Yeah.
And that is the responsibility of the teacher to some degree, to a large degree.
Yeah.
Like people should be – they should feel confident in your class. I mean you don't want to lie to them either.
Yeah. I was going to say I think I'm like this happens a lot with subs. I feel like in UCB a sub will come in, especially in an advanced class, and just sort of go, like have a baseline expectation – and be not met with it, like whatever they've expected, and then there's just negativity instantly, and we're all the worst. Like, we become the worst we've been over 8 weeks. Like, I remember that happened in your class, too. I don't even remember who the sub was, but he came in, and just,
Seth,
like, it was, it was negative. It was, like, rough. We, like, weren't doing enough. Yeah. And, like, we just couldn't do. And we're, like, that class, I thought, was really good. We were all very proud of the work that we did in that. And then we're, like, oh, no, sorry, Seth. Like, please don't be mad. He was, like, what have you guys been doing? Like, he said, I was, like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. But, that'll happen a lot. Like, I think it's that if it feels like you're expected to be, like, way better than you are, like, I feel like maybe the teacher has to match expectation with, like, ability a little bit. If you're expected to
also
be better than you are,
be selective. Like, is a class trying to hit game a lot, or is a class trying to hit, like, more realistic acting or just better patience or something? Or, like, you know, some of those old school UCB guys, and Seth is one of them. Those are Besser's first generation. Like, not all they know how to do, but they first and foremost think about layout a game and hit it.
Yeah.
And, you know, as someone who's never stopped teaching, there's a time when you have to back off that and be like, no, just forget game and what would you really say here?
Yeah.
Have a richer response than you have had.
Yeah.
And while you do that, your game gets soft.
Yeah.
While you're kind of, like, exploring that stuff. So, like, the teacher just has to have, like, the right expectations.
That's fair.
I think.
Yeah.
It's not even a question of better or worse.
Yeah. I'll stand by that one and say that if you expect way more than is possible of them, they'll never succeed.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
Also, too, like, I think talking about, like, we talk about, like, building up game and, like, stripping it away and, like, getting worse at it. I feel like that's always a thing. Like, that's a cycle. I feel like I go through a lot. And that is actually kind of helpful. Like, you get good at game. Like, I've gotten, at various points in the improv career, I've gotten, like, those emails from the teachers. Like, you're killing the game. Like, just act for once.
Okay.
You monster.
Yes. I think that's implied.
Yeah. I think that's, like, kind of a regular thing of, like, you go through that cycle of, like, I'm really, really focusing on this and I'm getting good at this again. And it's like, oh, but you've lost all sight of everything else.
What do you think about Cook County Social Club?
I've never seen them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not once.
Okay, how about, I'm going to get the name wrong. What's the IO three, the three guys who are the super guys? Like, Bob Dassey, Craig Kukowski, Dasarski?
Dazariski, yeah.
Oh, Dazariski.
Yeah.
Seen them?
Yeah.
Okay. How about TJ and Dave?
Only the movie.
So let's go with the name Dazariski. I've already forgotten how to say.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
It's good.
In this context.
Oh, in the context of, like,
these are three guys who are very funny.
Yeah, they're incredible.
And tremendously good actors.
Yeah.
Who were raised in a non-game priority environment.
Yeah.
But they make very pleasing shows.
Yeah.
Because I always think the one argument for teaching game hard, is that what I like about it is it makes the practitioners of it accountable for their shows being funny.
Yeah.
It's like, your show has to be funny, too. Like, we can't just all hug each other and call each other geniuses. It's like, what was the funny part?
Yeah.
And I've always liked that practicality. As a matter of fact, when I first started improv, 1999, I had actually done a couple classes at this place called Chicago City Limits in New York, which was, like, the big improv scene before
Short
UCB.
Form. Eugene Cordero? Charlie Sanders?
Yes, right. You know your stuff? Although the classes were long form. That was weird about CCL. Like, the shows were all... Yeah. The shows were short form, but if you took a class at CCL, this is my experience. I took a class in 96, 97, and 98 from Sean Conroy was my first teacher, John Cameron Telfer, and then Rob McCaskill. And I really enjoyed all these classes. The shows were all short form, but if you took a class, it was all long form stuff. Up on the wall of their classroom, they had three rules, and I forget the third one, but it was the first one was don't deny. Second one was make active choices. And I actually can't remember the third one. It's really strange. But it was something of the variety of, like, give a shit about what you're doing. Oh, I think it might have been justify.
Justify. Well, those are... What are
the
those
kitchen rules.
The kitchen rules, right? Yeah.
So, but that was definitely on their classroom. And we just did long form scenes. And I was taking their classes. I was like, what are we studying this for? This has nothing to do with what your shows are.
Yeah.
But I never even asked that question.
Yeah.
And there was no community in CCL. So there I wasn't like people hung out after and talked about it.
Huh.
So,
Looping into.
Get to UCB. So that was, those long form classes were very like group huggy and actorly, but just I always remember it, thinking like these the aren't thing. Funny.
Yeah.
But I am compelled by the philosophical things that were being taught. Like it's very, I can feel that this is good, and yet our product is not funny.
Yeah.
What's up with, and your shows are short form, so obviously you don't even have faith in this to do a show.
Yeah.
With this. Then the UCB showed up.
Yeah.
They do long form in the classes and in the shows. And when I took classes, I just really liked how built into the culture was, what was your funny idea?
Yeah.
I appreciated that because I hate stupid improv scenes that go nowhere.
So,
Dastorisky, and yes, they're funny.
They're very funny.
But they're clearly not.
They're not focused on game.
Yeah.
Because they're funny, and their tools, I think this is what happens, I've decided, is I watch shows at IO, I've taken classes there. I got up to their, like, level 5 or whatever, and I was like, we're still not doing anything funny. Does everybody know that? Like, I was, like, frustrated a number of times.
Yeah.
We're just not doing what's funny. What's with that? And I think what happens is their tools are good enough. Their tools are so strong of just, like, scene work that they can put in, like, interject things that are funny or weird or random or whatever and play with them enough as scene people.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
To, like, make it funny and make it real and, like, you know, in the improv way, have it come back. Like, they accidentally will do game. It's less priority, but they'll do it. And I think it's just because, like, their scene tools are so strong. And I think, you know, I don't think I can... I think at one point, and I bet it can't stand up to this now, you could put a group of IO performers together versus a group of UCB performers together and be like, well, these IO people are performing very well.
Yeah.
And these UCB people are very funny. I think UCB just surpassed it. It's just decimating everybody.
Yeah.
How rude. But you know, like, yeah, I think that's what happens is, like, you know, Craig, that guy's, he's funny. He'll just interject a little funny thing.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll play with it and they'll all make it great. Bob Dassey, you know, he makes.
He's amazing.
He's so, his little quips and he's hilarious and they can all play with it. They're seeing
one of my favorite improv shows I ever saw was a Weird Ass show with him and Stephanie Weir.
Yeah.
They came out to DCM. This is like DCM 2 or 3 or something. I think it was 3 because they went out and I'm nerds. And it was like, if anybody has the schedule for these old shows, but it was like Friday. Right after DCM started, they showed the Delmonic interviews first, which was this film documentary of Del. That's how they opened the marathon. And then I think Weird Ass was like the second or third show.
Yeah.
And so a lot of us had gotten there early to see Weird Ass. And they did not disappoint.
Yeah.
And Dassey and Stephanie did a scene. They both played. They played two women who were going to a bar to try to meet boys. Then they also played two boys. They switched, and they played two boys in another part of the bar, hoping to meet girls.
Yeah.
And then they met each other.
Yeah.
And then they all danced. And so they kept switching between four characters.
Yeah.
Each of them had two.
Yeah.
Who were dancing in, like, different styles. And it was amazing. Like, an amazing a bunch of just physical.
Yeah.
Is that clowning or just acting? Or it was just one of the funniest things.
Yeah.
And just most overwhelmingly, intimidatingly great things I'd ever seen.
Yeah,
and I still don't think I've ever done anything as good as that scene.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
But those, like that's a thing that I think will fundamentally, and a thing that IO will emphasize more, even in their classes now, of like showmanship and stuff like that. Where I think they put those type of tools in your pocket.
Yeah,
and like personally, because I started at UCB and whatever, I'm like, yeah, but. Like, I have to sit through so many unfunny scenes or so many pointless scenes.
I totally agree. And at CCL, even though I really did enjoy those classes, we didn't do any scenes until the end of our second level. And it really wasn't our third level that we started doing any scenes. It was all, like, exercises and, like, abbreviated, structured things that were, like, that they weren't short-form games. They were...
Yeah.
But it just took us forever to do scenes, and it frustrated me. And UCB... First day of level one, it was just one, not 101 then.
Yeah.
We were doing scenes. By the end of it, Kevin Mullaney had us up doing scenes, and I thought it was the coolest thing.
Oh, that's great.
I was so excited.
Do they do scenes in the first class now? I don't think they do.
They do, but they do those yes and paraphrasey scenes where you have to, like, you know,
it's been a while.
Here's an apple pie, and then the other person goes, oh, this is an apple pie, and it's your birthday.
Okay.
Those are on the first day.
Okay, fair enough.
Been a minute.
They're supposed to be. I think they are. I think those generally, that's not an exercise that teachers do not skip.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of time devoted to it in the curriculum, so I think that happens.
I remember my first day was Eugene Cordero.
Ooh, great one.
It was fun. It was really good. But I remember you do the rants, or maybe that wasn't
Pet
the first
peeve rant.
One.
That's the first
rant.
One, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember having, like, an inflated premise and going, like, this isn't working. Like bit like this is not right.
Yeah,
I can see that this will not fly here.
Yeah. Oh,
and I remember that kind of feeling good.
Yeah,
because I remember going like, oh, this isn't quite right. Like yeah. I knew that it was a little.
Oh, you got the lesson right away.
Oh, it hurt though. Oh Christ, it hurt.
Really?
Because I still. Had
I
to,
think
like,
of that.
What,
exercise...
am I going to change it like midway through?
Teaching 101 again, and it's been a while. Those first 2 days are just about getting people over their fears.
Yeah.
Not that they even totally get over it, but just like fear is dominant and you just want exercises that are doable.
Yeah.
So that you finish them and they're survived. So like even if somebody is doing the way I teach pet peeve rant is if someone is being jokey in it, you're supposed to note them and be like, oh, you're not supposed to be fake. You're supposed to be honest here. I will say that like, but I won't make a big deal about it because mostly it's like you got up in front of the class, you spoke and you're still alive is what I'm thinking the lesson is.
Yeah.
So I don't even start teaching any real improv in my head until the third session. But that's not that long a wait. I feel that's a fine
compromise.
That's not
long at all. Yeah.
Yeah. But I like the UCB's forcing you to do something. The other thing is you can't teach taste or funniness. And some people are just – they have a sense of what's funny more than others.
Yeah.
And they're going to get it so much faster than everybody else. There's no formula that – leads you to funniness, I don't think, or very little.
How often do you think doing teams and stuff, this is part of this, I feel like this is maybe true, that like good teams versus bad teams.
Yeah.
Hopefully everybody's technically proficient at some point, but there also is a level, I think there's a matter of, like you said, taste. I think that will probably define like the ability.
If your taste overlaps?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge.
I feel like coming up, or like when I started, I played with a lot of teams and was just like, "Eek! Can't believe we're doing this scene again."
Yeah,
and you know, fully admitting like that's terrible. That's a terrible mindset.
No,
to
no,
be
no.
In.
But it's true. Like some very funny improv teams. Like the Swarm is my favorite team of all time, and they still perform, they're still a very good team. They're not as good as when they all used to do it and they were practicing a lot.
Yeah.
But those guys, the last time I saw them a bunch, which was a couple years ago, they still do the move. And can I just say that I love the Swarm? I'm about to say something negative. To me, I feel like I'm about to talk about like what's wrong with the Beatles. And I want everyone to know that I'm not an idiot. But just for the sake of analyzing improv stuff, they'll still do the move where if a scene's kind of going wonky and it gets complicated, somebody will tag everybody out and be like, hey, I read your script.
Sure.
What's happening here? And that to me is a real hack move.
Sure.
Like it's really cliche and it's below the Swarm.
Yeah.
But they love it, I think.
Yeah.
And they enough of them love it that it's not a problem. Like if somebody on the team doesn't think it's a good move, it's not a big enough deal to like derail the group enthusiasm for the scene. But there are on teams that I've been in, that would kill the show.
Yeah.
Because everybody'd be like, ugh, what? Like, it would, like, hurt the group mind of the show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, taste has to be there. You can't do that. Although, I think the biggest problem with the UCB teams is the opening.
Opening?
Not being on the same page with what you want out of your opening is killing
I've
UCB
heard a
Herald
lot
teams.
Of, like, trouble with that in the past of, like, having never been on Herald Night and only hearing it kind of, like, second or first day, whatever. It's, like, it's a lot of little debates and arguments and, like, I don't know. I'm curious how much it matters because I feel like I don't care. Like, I feel like I can get away. It's not an opening that I can't get away with.
Yeah.
There's openings that I can pull premise from less or more.
Yep.
And honestly, I don't mind not pulling premise. That's not a good idea for if you're going on Herald Night, but I'm like, I don't really mind.
I know what you mean.
I'm
with you on that.
I'll get there.
I feel the same way. But if you're just problems of taste.
Yeah.
Differences in taste prevent a team from really excelling.
Yeah.
But also differences in what you are expecting to get out of your initiations is a just as common and very fixable thing.
Let's dive into that more. So So you're talking. Let's talk about opening.
This is particular to UCB.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're big on openings, and we're also big on the pattern game, which is the most inhuman of all openings.
Yeah, it's for real robots.
Yeah.
So, what does I feel like one challenge that I've heard fairly often is like people like not cool with living room or monologues just because it's like, too easy. We're
That's
on
right.
Herald Night. We shouldn't be doing something so easy.
I think they're right.
Really?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I mean, for the audience's perspective, it doesn't matter. Your show's good or your show's not good.
Here's why I think I love it.
Okay.
Kid Grift. When they started, that's what they were doing.
Which
and,
one?
They were doing kind of monologue. With
I love
a
Kid
loose,
Grift, too. I've seen them.
Loose kind of, anybody feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they were doing a monologue, three monologues, and then chiming in occasionally, not like hardcore living room, like everybody's talking always, but just like kind of chiming in occasionally. And I remember thinking, oh, these dudes are learning shit about each other.
Yeah.
And like have like, and I'm getting what this team is all about. And like, I'm very quickly just like locked into what their sense of humor is about. And I remember, I feel safe saying this, that's the team I feel most connected to and most like I get what they think is funny.
Yeah.
I feel like if any team's ever had a personality that I understand, it's Kid Grift. And I think a lot of it just comes from watching those openings. So I was like, oh, they're kind of like, I see exactly what they care about, and I see exactly what the others find interesting about what they care about. And like, yeah, it's easy or whatever, but it's like, it was good. It was good. And it clearly helped their team. I suspect it clearly helped their team. And you know, if you're going to go in there, what's the dumbest opening? What's like the least personal
pattern game?
Probably. Oh yeah. If you're getting in there and doing pattern game, and, you know, you're stuck, like, looking down and not necessarily looking at each other or looking at each other and going, like, why would you say, you know, twirly umbrella? You know, like, I don't understand. Like, if anything, that's almost very – that's very isolating in a weird way to go, like, why? Why?
Yeah.
I don't understand that. And I feel like I'm sure you've seen that pattern game where somebody says – and it happens all the time. When somebody says something in there and everybody's like, what the hell are you talking about?
Sure, yeah.
And, like
– probably almost every time.
Almost every time that happens. And that's a thing that's like markedly disconnecting.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, well, cool, you're doing the harder one, but your team is starting off on the same page. If improv is a huge part about just connecting, you're like making it hard on yourselves.
I think you're right. I actually think we agree with our assessments, but we just are drawing a different conclusion, which is that I believe that that is what's wrong with the pattern game as a piece of entertainment.
Yeah.
And its functional effect on the rest of the piece. But no, wait a minute. There's two things. First of all, just Herald Night is like a weird honor guard position where you want to do even the senseless part of the ceremony well.
Yeah.
Like you want to be part of this tradition.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, fuck the audience. I want to be... Oh, there's been a whole generations of people who have worn a big black fuzzy hat while they are on guard duty. Then I'm going to wear a big black fuzzy hat.
Yeah.
I want to be part of it,
yeah.
Even though this hat is not functional.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, there is something emotionally safe and lazy about the monologue and the living room opening. You're not committing.
Mm-hmm.
You're not being an actor. You're being a scared comedian who won't put themselves out there.
That's fair.
That is one thing about the monologue that's bad, is like you can be scared and it never makes you not be scared. It never makes you commit.
Yeah.
So I would prefer, I always think like character openings are the best marriage of the two, where you have to be characters, you have to commit to a character, but
sure.
You're still speaking like a human being within the realm of that. Then I think a lot of Herald teams end up with that compromise. You'll see a lot of like character flocking or like point of view things, or even that telephone one that Belmonte's doing right now.
Yeah.
Which Sentimental Lady used to do. Those are all versions of like character openings.
Interesting.
Because it satisfies that itch of like, we're committing to something. We're not being cowards.
Yeah.
But it's not as isolatingly alienating as a word association thing.
If you said, how about this? If a team did a monologue, and then I'll totally let this go because this is, I think we totally agree on this.
We do agree on our assessment of the impact of it.
If a team does a monologue openings.
Yeah.
And then they fully commit and do every scene. Like just,
they do a great
they
show.
They do great show after that.
Great commitment.
Do you care? Like,
no, as an audience member?
Yeah.
No.
But even as a teacher, like even as a person who's like a connoisseur of the form or whatever.
I will at some point.
Yeah.
I'll be like, right, you better show me that you can switch it up.
Yeah. I think that's true for anybody in anything. You got to be able to do something.
Swarm was my favorite improv team of all time, but maybe the best Herald team I ever saw was Dillinger, and they used to do a variety of like kind of homegrown hodgepodgey openings, and then Besser came through town and did his like pattern game workshop.
Yeah.
Very early in his time doing this, he had just moved to LA, and it shook everybody up, and they decided they were going to beat the pattern game, and they fucking did it.
How'd they beat it?
They just were so smart, they could like function within that weird robotic.
Yeah.
They're doing a reunion show in August here in LA.
Really?
Yeah, because Brett Christensen, who's one of the members, is moving to North Carolina. And so they all wanted to do one show together before it becomes basically impossible to get them all. Because most of them are here.
Yeah.
So the three guys from New York are flying out.
Oh, that's
and
great.
And they're doing a Dillinger reunion.
When is it already on the schedule?
You got to go.
Is it already
all
on the
improv nerds must go to the Dillinger reunion. You must be there.
Right.
This is a call.
I'm not going to put this out so I can make sure I get to
use all your connections. This is more important than anything except for Manzoukas doing an hour mono scene with Amy Poehler. This is second only to that.
I had tickets. Didn't go.
That hurts, right?
Yeah, it does.
Me too. I wish I saw that.
I don't remember why. My girlfriend's like, do you want to go? I was like, I think I have something else.
You had no way of knowing.
Yeah, it really hurts my heart. Never seen Poehler do improv.
She is as good as advertised.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure she's rusty because she doesn't do it relative to her, but all four of them.
Yeah.
The four of them they are all so great at it. It's sort of insane.
I get it. It hurts.
Yeah, you should be. You're right to be hurt.
Fuck.
But the Dillinger, but here's the thing about Dillinger was they always put so much pressure on themselves because they were all perfectionists that I know they're going to freak out about this show.
Yeah.
They're all going to be nervous wrecks. And they know people like me are putting the pressure on them hard. I'm saying
they're just.
I'm saying they're one of the best, if not the best, Herald team I ever saw. Some of them will hear this secondhand because
there's like an email chain going on
they're
right
improv
now.
Improv nerds, it'll
Hines
get to
is
them.
Really wants to kill it.
Oh great. Yeah, okay. And they'll deny that they're nervous about it, but they will be because Dillinger is a stomach. Anxiety-filled team, and they'll figure it out.
That's great.
They will figure it out because they did a reunion show in New York like 4 years ago, and I think they went through a similar process of like, what should we do? Oh, we want to be great. Then they arrived at some level of pressure, but taking it easy on themselves, and they did an amazing show with a pattern game opening. Suggestion was super smart.
Super smart.
Sort of making fun of them.
That is rude. When is this Dillinger show?
It's in August at some point.
All right.
They're going to get a full hour. It's like at 7 o'clock. I could find out.
All right. Well, it's not on the schedule yet. I want to like make sure I get on it. It's very important to me. This is more important than anything.
One of them, Eric Tenoy, is staying with me. He's a member of Dillinger and a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And so that's how I know about this. And I'll find it and tell you before the end of this recording. You got a bullet point list of a bunch of stuff. Can we just go through them fast?
Yeah. Let's hit a bunch of them.
I love that you have that. I'm so flattered and excited that you even have that many things you might want. Not that there's that many. But
there's a ton.
A handful
a
of them,
million.
And I think that's really cool.
There's a bunch of – the first thing you said in class to me, I was like, hey, do you mind if I take notes?
Uh-huh.
And you were like, do you care if I don't say anything interesting? I was like, all right, this is great. I already like it. There's some things that you said, and I just want to have your – you speak on them just real quickly. You said a tag is expensive. Can you just expound on a few of these things?
Yeah, tag is expensive. People equate tag outs and walk-ons because they're both ways that from the back line you can support somebody else's scene. I get that. But they're not equivalent. The tag destroys the momentum of the scene and then restarts it with your new who, what, where.
Yeah.
So it is expensive in that it breaks the momentum of the scene and then has to restart it. So your move has to be funny enough to justify that. Has to replace all that momentum.
Yeah.
Whereas a walk-on is additive.
Yeah.
And you might confuse things, but you can also just back off and you won't lose the momentum of the existing engine. So it's lower stakes to try a walk-on and then back off. But if you're doing a tag, you better be fucking funny.
I remember believing at a certain point early on after probably like second year.
Between August 5th and August 11th. Go ahead.
Between the 5th and 11th. Early on, I remember like doing walk-ons and remembering believing, like figuring out something that how helpful it can be. And all, like I just remember like that. I feel like a hero when I do walk-ons right. And it's and you when you do a tag in, it's so easy. It's so easy to look like an asshole.
It's,
You can really look great doing a walk on well, but you can can really, really look like an asshole doing a tag out.
I think the time to do a tag though is when there's very clearly like a pattern that is asking for like there are times when a tag out is welcome.
Yeah.
And it's just like the game has been it's basically whenever there's been a huge reaction and you just want to recreate that reaction three times in a row.
Yeah.
That's the easiest time to do a tag out and not have it hurt.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's like, bagels, and you tag in and then makes them go like, spaghetti, you know, whatever.
I love that one. Love that game. That's a classic game. Good old Dillinger. Okay, just impactful versus big was a thing that you touched on.
Right. So you're trying to make a big move. Often just getting more specific will create just as big an impact as bigger. So my dumb example before of like cupcakes, cake, super cake. Or
yeah.
What did I say?
Yeah, I think
muffins,
that's right.
Cake, super cake.
Yeah.
Muffins, cake. Angel food cake is just as
good
big,
as super cake.
Just as impactful, but it's like less crazy and maybe more helpful. Specificity is just as good as magnitude.
I'd argue it's funnier too. Like it's easier.
It's
to
almost
get
always
to,
better.
It's easier to get. It's very easy to get in. Like I know it's something like this, and it's less impressive. It's very much less impressive when somebody when people are very specific and like you. That's like
less
that's a convoy thing. That's like the convoy thing. They're very specific, and you're like, oh wow, how do they do? That's incredible. It's more impressive.
When Amy Poehler on SNL, they had a cold open where they were all rapping about their own histories.
Okay.
They were like, Amy was very new, and it was sort of like, oh, Amy's new, and she'll be too shy to do a rap.
Yeah.
And then she grabs it and very aggressively, like, does hugely boastful rap. And she boasts about being from IO and UCB.
Yeah.
And one of her phrases is, my choice is specific. That was one of her things.
Yeah.
And so, I was like, oh, yeah, specificity.
So she must know.
Specificity over bigness.
It's great.
Yeah.
But we talked a little bit about that. The endowments and taking a beat. I don't know.
Taking like a beat to digest.
Yeah.
There should be – the teacher should make it a default protocol behavior that everybody gets as much time as they want to absorb moves.
Yeah.
Be comfortable with silence. Let people feel – your move, especially the first three or four. I feel like Neil Casey is the guy to watch for this. I'm sure there's LA people that I just don't know as many people out here yet. So, but in New York, Neil Casey's the guy, and John Gemberling. They're never in a hurry at the start of a scene.
Yeah,
they take all the time they want to feel it before they answer.
Yeah,
and they carry such gravity that people usually naturally give it to them. But everybody should be given that amount of time, and everyone should take it as much as necessary. It might not. There might not be that much time needed, but as you got to get raise your standard of what it feels like to fully digest something.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
and I feel like that's the thing that's tough, and you have to do. You have to really fight. Slow down. Just let your just take it in.
Yeah,
just take it in. Take it in. Take it in. Trust me, it'll be worth it.
You also need not you the pre- the
okay.
people who
it's
are
me.
Hearing that. Maybe you. Maybe me too. You could digest it more than you think you are. You think you've digested it because you intellectually got it. But if you wait a moment, it'll like seep into your bones a little bit better.
I'm sure you've done the exercise or had people do the exercise of like just take like 5 seconds in between lines. And you can kind of tell when people are just like, I thought of the thing and now I'm waiting to say it.
Yes, and but even that's like, better. Even that's better. And also I don't do that one because nobody can wait 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I've tried 2 seconds and they can't wait
nobody
that long.
Nobody can do that.
So I just do 45 seconds of silence at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates a slower pace. Automatically.
Interesting.
Given the suggestion, wait 60 seconds sometimes ago before anybody's allowed to start.
We did a lot of that, like looking at each other and like kind of faces or whatever.
Yeah,
would you say take on a stance?
A heat and a wait.
A heat and a wait. Yeah. That's good.
Yep.
Just totally shifting gears. What makes a sketch worth writing?
I wish I was better at sketch or more practiced. I feel like Eva Anderson is my local guru for sketch. She's got such amazing advice. But
because if we say
I like that phrase, I guess something that is personal to you that makes you laugh, something that would make you and your best friend laugh together. Like it should have a little hint of insidey jokeness.
Yeah,
indulgence. That's what makes it worth writing.
Okay,
if it's just going to be an on the predictable premise, I don't think it's as worth it as if. I mean, I hate to cite a beer commercial, but I'm going to. But that old Budweiser campaign that where they all would go, what's up?
Yeah, sure.
What's up? That originally was just like a short film, not, and then Budweiser bought it and used it for a commercial.
Oh, yeah.
But the short film was like such a wonderful illumination of a type of communication between friends.
Yeah.
That had not been, had a spotlight shown on it like that.
Yeah.
That's like a, that's what's worth writing a sketch about.
That's great. I like that.
Yeah.
That's a great criteria. I think I also, just because if we say that we're decent or good at improv, we can come up with games all day long. Right? Like,
yeah,
we can do them all day long, but probably they're not, it's probably not worth doing every one, but I like that as a good criteria. It's like, would this make me and a buddy laugh?
Yeah. Whoever your best friend is that you feel funniest with.
Yeah.
Do they think it's funny?
Yeah.
Do you both think it's funny? That's a good place to start.
I like it. That's great.
My friend Neil Casey, he and I write sketches, and the last one he wrote was a father and the guy dating the father's daughter. In an argument over what constituted a true landline phone. Like, what's the difference between an internet phone and a landline phone? Who wrote 10 pages on it? Like, the idea of people arguing about that really made us laugh.
10 pages.
It was too many. But the point is, like, okay, that got us going.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Quickly shifting gears back to improv. Is like, the number one thing, is it just being able to, like, be wrong for a long time? Is, like, that the trick? Feel like maybe people,
yeah, that is a big one,
just can't get they it can, like, yeah, don't want to,
definitely 101, they can't do it. If you tell someone to play it real to them is fighting as hard as you can to protect yourself.
Yeah,
which I understand actually where that comes from, but it's, yeah, not funny.
Yeah,
yeah, learning how to lose, I don't know, people who are funny naturally know that losing is funny.
Yeah,
I don't know how to teach that.
It's tough.
I have
though,
a hard time teaching it.
You slip by anybody, even if you get it, you slip back into it. It's easy to go like, no, I'm gonna be right here. You're like, oh shit, so much funnier. So much funnier being wrong or crazy.
Yeah, it's like, so easy.
The idiot. Ugh. Get to have way more fun, I feel like, too.
I remember this from my 101 class yesterday. Two people washing dishes. One of them said, like, and they're on the same page physically, and they seem to be getting along. And one of them says, like, hand me a dish. Go, yeah, here it is.
Yeah.
And then someone says, you know that even though we're twins, I was born a minute before you, so I'm better. And that's maybe an okay initiation. And it was related somehow to the monologue.
Yeah.
And the other person said, well, Why do you think that? And then the first person goes, well, Mom likes me best. Mom's always loved me best, and she tells us that.
Yeah.
And the other person goes, well, Dad loves me best, so that's all I need. And
yeah.
I'm like, ugh, you just ruined it.
Yeah.
Like, be shit on. You should be shit on right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Also, to just state, like, I'm comfortable with that, too. Like, Dad likes me best, so I'm okay. It's like, I'm comfortable with what this problem could be or, like, how we could play this out. It's like, I will not be too upset about it.
Yeah, I won't give it any stakes.
I love it.
But it was an instinct to, like, I'll find a way to win that doesn't deny the facts. I can understand why the person thinks that's a great move.
Yeah.
It actually isn't the worst move because they're not denying anything, but
it's
they're
tough.
Protecting themselves
yeah.
instead of finding a pattern to further in the scene.
Yeah. That's real rough.
Real rough.
How do you initiate?
All right. If I got nothing, which is usual. Sometimes after I watch, like, Joe Wengert or some premise people do amazing premises, I will try sometimes to initiate strong premises.
Yeah.
But that's in a minority of the time.
Yeah.
Normally what I do is I try to say something that needs to be unpacked.
Yeah.
That involves the other person.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not a great way to initiate. But I do, if I'm honest, this is what I do.
Yeah.
It's something unpacked, like, not like a huge mystery, but just like, my initiation by itself doesn't tell the whole story.
Yeah. I need you to speak to this. I need you to say something. I need you to speak a little bit more on this fact or whatever
yeah.
it is.
It'll be like, you know, I don't remember leaving this much bacon out.
Yeah.
That'll be like an initiation I like.
There's a little bit of a mystery to it.
It's just silly. It's like a hint of silliness.
Yeah.
We don't know what the answer is.
Yeah.
That's my favorite initiation.
Yeah.
But it's not very leading or helpful. And a lot of times people will look at me and be like, is that really all you're going to give me? And then if I do that and that bombs, the next scene I'll come out with like a full thing.
Like a full premise that you've been cooking. Yeah.
yeah.
That's fun.
So something to unpack is what I'll do.
Okay.
Or if I really have nothing, like my actual, what I tell myself, if I'm stepping off the back line and I got to go, I just say something about the other person. That's what I start. You're wearing a suit.
Uh-huh.
That's my, like, I'm falling backwards and I throw something up at the basket initiation.
Okay. Why?
Just so that I give you something.
Yeah.
And you have to Well, even better, it'll be something provocative that you have to react to.
Yeah.
Usually, and I'll be angry, because if I'm scared, I get angry.
You're scared to get angry?
So it'll just be like, yeah, that's right, I took your shoes.
Yeah.
You know, something I'm just saying to you that you have to answer to.
Fair enough.
This is not great, but that's what I do.
Interesting. I like it. That's good. How much time do you have, by the way? I don't. What are we at? 2:15.
I got to teach at 3.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Like 15 minutes?
Yeah. We'll wrap it up. Let's talk a little bit about, you want to talk a little bit about stand-up. So let's talk about it, man.
Okay.
So you're doing some stand-up.
That's right.
How's it going?
I've dabbled in stand-up for years.
Okay.
Before I did improv in the late 90s, I went around to open mics in New York and tried to do stand-up, and I was terrified.
Yeah.
But I did that for kind of a while, like 9 or 10 months, just very timidly. Then I got into improv, forgot stand-up. But then I went back to stand-up in like 2004, 5. My friend Brian Finkelstein started doing this mic in Brooklyn, and he would give me spots even though I had no experience, basically.
Yeah.
And I developed a bunch of material doing his show. And then like every couple of years, I would just dive back into it and do all the mics in New York.
Yeah.
And every return trip to the world of stand-up, I'd be like a little bit stronger than I had been last time.
Yeah.
But never enough to be like a known person. Every time I'd come back, there'd be a whole bunch of new stand-ups doing it who didn't know who I was. And they would always be like, hey, you're pretty good. You should keep working at it, which is a nice thing to say. But I'd be like, I know. You don't know me, but I know. And I even for a while, right before I moved, was doing stuff at the Comic Strip, an Upper East Side, like,
sure,
old school comedy club, like 2 drink minimum, like headshots of like Richard Belzer on the wall when you walk in, comedy club. I was doing sets there. It was really weird.
What's that thing called where you never hear a word or phrase before, and then all you do is hear it?
I don't know.
There's a phrase for it. It's like a thing that happens. It's, uh-huh, some known phenomenon. Some friend just asked if anybody does a Richard Belzer impression this morning. I was like, who the fuck is Richard Belzer? Still don't know. I'm still not sure. But that makes me so happy that it just happened. I had to take some time away from this podcast, yeah, to just mention that it's happened.
Yeah, that's funny.
So doing, like, I do stand-up. Or not at all. No. I don't do stand-up. I'll, every 2-3 months, feel like I have something. I know you do like jokes, or it seems like.
That's right. It's pretty standard fare.
Yeah. I do. I very much try to do something very personal and why I think that's funny.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like every 2 or 3 months, if there's something going on, I'll just like try to just dump it all out on the stage and,
right,
see what I can do as far as putting together jokes for it. Usually I'll think of a few jokes ahead of time, like what they would be.
Okay.
Roughly how this story will go.
Okay.
And where the jokes are, and just like improvise my way out of it.
Okay.
Terrible plan.
I don't think it's the worst plan.
I do it a lot.
I think a lot of people do that. I think that is a way that people do. I don't think it's the highest success rate.
No.
And the people who only do stand-up would sort of look down on the laziness of that approach.
Very lazy.
But it is something that people do, and I think could work.
Yeah. I think
Louis C.K. never writes anything down.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly he's put the time in where...
Yeah.
But
it's like a...
There's something about just having it in your head and working it out each time you do it.
Yeah. I feel like just because of improv, if nothing else, and this is probably a terrible habit, I know how to, in a meta way, get out of it. Like, if I'm not getting a laugh, I feel like I know how to get a laugh.
I think that I've seen a lot of improvisers try stand-up, and I guess I am an improviser who tries stand-up.
Yeah.
And I think they are, by and large, pretty good at reading the room.
Yeah.
From their improv experience. Like, they're pretty savvy about right what the room is thinking.
Yeah.
Maybe better, much better than a stand-up of the same experience level as them.
Yeah.
Which is, like, almost none.
Yeah.
So that stage comfort is pretty valuable.
Yeah. So tell me what, just talk about, like, what do you do? Like, what's your whole shindig on it?
Stand-up?
Yeah, yeah. I mean...
It changes a lot. It's mostly trying to be, like, honest and have a punchline.
Yeah.
But closer to jokes than stories.
Yeah.
Observation from real life, absurd punchline.
Yeah.
Move on.
Okay.
But it's rough.
Do you look at it in any type of game way?
Yes.
Okay.
Trying to hit the game 3 times.
Yeah.
Set up a game and hit it 3 times.
Okay, fair enough.
If it's a fully evolved bit.
Interesting.
I mean, I definitely use those terms in my head. But I'm trying. My first priority when I'm doing it is to be myself. I don't want to be fake. That's
okay.
My number one. I don't like stand-ups that look like they're trying to sound like somebody else.
Yeah.
so that I'm trying to be authentic.
Yeah.
At least so that I, to myself, internally feel like myself as I do it. I should say that.
Okay.
So that's my first goal, is what can I say tonight that won't be full of shit?
Yeah.
What can I talk about that is something that still matters to me, or I'm still connected to what it means?
I'm just going to chime in with my thoughts on this and like what I do, as speaking as somebody who has no experience and has no place speaking about it. I feel like I try to go in fully exposed. Like I try to go in and just like, yeah, there's everything about, like, it's just open.
Yeah.
Because it feels more confident, or it just makes me feel like they can't really get me.
Yeah.
There's something about being able to be very open.
I mean, you're supposed to be vulnerable and open when you're performing. That seems... I think audiences certainly respect honesty, and they're pretty good about smelling bullshit.
Yeah.
So, I think that's the number one thing that stand-up teaches you, is if you try to bullshit the audience, they know.
Yeah.
Improv does not teach you that. Improv teaches you, if you disagree with your scene partner, they know.
Yeah.
And that's why I think improv does a lot sillier, stupider shit than stand-up, but stand-up is a lot meaner and more disagreeing stuff.
Yeah.
Because the mediums are... they're reinforcing different priorities in you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stand-ups don't lie.
Yeah.
But they're narcissistic and mean.
Yeah.
And improvisers are silly and goofy to an annoying degree a lot of times, but they're very good at collaborating.
Yeah. Is stand-up... So I constantly... We'll just... few more little things and we went back to improv a little bit.
That's okay.
Is stand-up like a more valid pursuit? Is improv worth it at all?
Yo, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah. God,
assure
yes.
me, please. Because I love improv. I enjoy it very much. But constantly, I'm like, what? Why?
Yeah.
Why?
No, they're both super valid. There's no doubt about it. Like, but I do think that improv is like jazz, where people who get into it love to write and talk about it, as we are demonstrating, beyond... the need for that.
Nobody needs this.
There's more books on jazz than there is jazz.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that jazz is invalid. It just means people maybe talk about it more than you need to.
Sure.
And it actually happens to stand-up, too. How many podcasts are there where just stand-up comics is jerking each other off? It's annoying.
Yeah.
I mean, we're doing that, so I can't totally throw stones. Not literally jerking each other off, but improv jerking each other off.
Yeah.
But, like... I just think stand-up tends to create good writers.
Yeah.
And improv tends to create good actors.
Yeah.
And there's overlap in both, because the stand-ups are performing and they're getting to know their persona, and the improvisers have to be able to shape ideas concisely and well. But,
yeah,
you know, improv is like 80% acting and stand-up is like 80% writing.
I like more improvisers than I like stand-ups.
Me too.
I guess like people.
Yeah.
Like them
a lot
more.
It creates better... I mean, this is not everyone agrees with me. What I just said, I think people would generally agree with. What I'm about to say is just my opinion.
Yeah.
But improv makes you a much nicer person than stand-up does. Stand-up makes you a guarded, full of yourself, frightened asshole.
Very on the defensive. Very much
unless you have a good enough emotional core to overcome that, which many stand-ups do.
I don't believe that.
They do. And I think most stand-ups, they reach a bottoming out where they have to focus on being a better person, despite what their art form is doing to them.
Yeah.
And they prioritize it. I have a couple stand-up friends who I've seen go through asshole periods and come out just very genuinely nicer people.
Yeah.
And I think they bottomed out asshole-wise.
Yeah. I feel like that happens.
And reform it.
You can really go...
But they could use... You know, those two mediums could use something from each other.
Absolutely.
Like, improv could use stand-up's absolute demand of honesty and smartness. The best improvisers... have that on themselves.
Yeah.
They won't take bullshit, and they are trying to be smart. Not like intellectual smarty pants, but like playing it real. Does this make sense? The very best improvisers have a high standard for that. And the best stand-ups are nice people. You can tell in crowd work. You can tell in a stand-up's crowd work. Are they mad at the crowd when they're doing badly?
Yeah.
And if they're not, if they're amused but not mad, they're probably pretty nice people.
Yeah.
I think
that.
Pete Holmes does really good crowd work in this fashion. He tends to not turn on the crowd.
Yeah.
And same with Birbiglia, Jamie Lee. There's people who, like, they are not rude when it's not going their way. Their instinct is to not blame other people.
Probably a thing that I am going to believe that improvisers could use, too. It's easy to learn improv and never learn what you think is funny.
Yeah, get a hold of your voice. That's true. Stand-up.
All they have is what they think is funny.
Yeah, that's right.
And they'll learn whether or not other people think it's funny or how to communicate
it. You're totally
it.
Right. You're totally right. And, but improvisers and improv, won't. Yeah, you lose track of it because you're just trying to grab onto what the group is thinking, and you need to assert your own voice. Like, that's totally true.
Here's a question. I did improv for a long time. A lot of opportunities doing improv. Never believed in it. Just never believed in what our voice.
Uh-huh.
Is that like totally detrimental? It's got to be, right?
You never believed in whose voice?
Our voice as a team, what we did.
Oh.
I'd just be like, nah, this isn't good. I'd write off like 98% of the shows. And that's not the case for other improv.
You had a case where this was true of you and a team?
Yeah,
that's, you should get out of that team.
You should get out of that, right?
I mean, it depends where you are. If you're early enough and you're learning, you need to just get reps and learn, and you shouldn't be fussy about that. If the people are not bad people, like as human beings.
At a certain point, you
have
to.
At a certain point,
you
got to go with the people who agree with your sensibility.
Right.
I say the 2-year mark.
Yeah, 2 years? Okay.
Roughly.
I'm going to put that as a prescription out for everybody, 2 years, and start figuring it out.
I mean, I'm guessing. It depends on how much you're doing, but I feel like you spend a year just like learning how to do it, and then another year getting reps so you're very comfortable with it, and then I think you're free to start making. You're not mastered it yet, but you're at a point where you can start being selective.
Fair enough. I'm going to have you solve a few problems for me.
I'm ready.
TV. You're doing a little TV now, I understand?
I did Broad City and Amy Schumer.
Great. Writing.
Oh, yeah. I sold a pitch to Comedy Central.
Okay. Do all characters have a game?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All good ones. Especially on TV.
Yeah. I feel like that's true.
The Friends are all games.
They're all games. They're great.
Seinfeld, they're all games. They all have more than one game.
How do you put on a game and have it not feel artificial and bullshit?
I don't know. That's a great question.
Okay.
I can't solve it for you. I would, because I haven't done it. I haven't actually done TV.
Yeah.
I would guess it is getting a good actor who can create the semblance of reality, who makes it look real.
Yeah.
I just watched Hudson Hawk yesterday. It's a Bruce Willis movie from 1991, which is one of the worst movies of all time.
Great.
That's not true, but it's a really bad movie. There's plenty of worse movies.
Yeah.
It's a bad movie. It's a failed movie. But in that movie, James Coburn looks great.
Yeah.
Maybe great's overstating it. He looks good. He looks like a valid, sincere, earnest presence.
Yeah.
And I was like, God, he must be an amazing actor. He just makes it look real.
He does.
No one else is able to do it, or very few people.
Yeah.
There's
a level of...
So get that person to do your character, I think, is the best way to solve that.
It's a thing of something... I think there's something in there, like a character can have bullshit to it, and being able to... Something in there like bringing... the non-joke to it. We've been writing, sold a couple web series things, so now we're kind of like focusing and really getting it going, and it's more and more going like, don't put bullshit in there because it's not going to work. And I think that's part of what we talked a little bit too, is like, it's just not going to work.
It really rarely does.
Like, it's funny, like we'll go like, this is funny, this would be like, we get away with it, it's in a sketch, but like, nobody's going to deal with this.
I totally agree.
Cool.
I'm learning that lesson too, and I have trouble remembering it.
All right, we got 2 minutes. We got to touch a pearl of wisdom, which is a note or a piece of feedback or advice that you got that was very impactful for you. And then one last thing. This is like a very like practical, boring thing. How do you keep everything in your head? How do you keep good callbacks? This is how you do an hour-long show, Smokes. It was just an incredible callback that like tied the whole show together. It was like somebody, you made somebody into a card and handed it to Eugene Cordero, and it goes like, go give that to a kid and scare him. That was the very first scene of the show. I was dying. It was very funny.
Oh, yeah,
if you remember this.
I do remember that.
But I was like, and I think
Bobby Moynihan was in this set.
No, he wasn't.
Oh, was he maybe the previous week? Sorry.
Maybe. I would remember some Bobby Moynihan. Okay. Yeah, give us to a kid and scare him. Very funny. How do you keep it all in your head? I don't know if there's any like practical advice. I feel like it's sometimes it's like labeling things to me, or it's just like this feels vaguely similar.
I periodically check in with myself during the show.
Yeah.
I mean, every now and then I'll stop and just make myself think back on what's happened.
What's happened so far.
I will spend a whole long time. It's whatever easily comes to mind.
Yeah.
And I'll definitely try to remember the first scene.
Yeah.
Because those callbacks are the most fun.
Yeah. For sure.
So I'll just make sure if there's anything worth it, I'll hold. And while it's happening, I'll hold on to it. This is the first scene. I'll be like, is anything in here I'm going to bring back?
Yeah.
I'll be like, maybe we see the moment before this, the moment after that.
Yeah.
So while the first scene is happening, if I'm not in it, I think about that. A couple times throughout the show, I will just do a check-in. Usually what I'll do is I'll just kind of look up and down the back line and just remember everybody's best parts.
Yeah.
Like, what do they do? Okay, all right, I got it. Just to keep it closer to the front of my brain.
That's great.
Then I don't do that. So this is that's it. And then like, and I do consciously try to be aware, or toward the end of the show, callback time. What can I call back?
Yeah.
all right, that first scene had that thing I was thinking about. All right, Joe did this character. Maybe this.
Yeah.
But then I don't do it unless there's like an opening for it. A lot of times I won't do anything.
Really?
But they're ready. I've always got some in mind. I was on a team with someone named Shannon O'Neill on the Stepfathers in New York. And Shannon,
very funny.
Shannon is maybe the number one best person at callbacks I've ever seen in all my life. Eric Tenoy being a close second. Well, they just seem to have the whole show, every line, and they can do it.
Yeah.
And so I learned Shannon would remind me of how powerful that was. So it motivated me to get better at it.
That's great.
Don Finelli's also good. There's a lot of people who are really good.
There's a lot of funny people in this community. It's incredible.
True. It's true.
Pearls of wisdom. Note, feedback, advice you got. How is impactful for you? Something maybe that you kind of keep close to your heart.
Match energy. John Gemberling was in my first practice group, and we did a Herald, and it was really bad. And I was like, what did I do wrong there? And he's like, you got to match energy.
He just said that. He was on your team, and he's like, you got to match me, man.
I was asking him what That's do great. You think I should do? So it wasn't like he was giving me it was funny, but it wasn't. John was an extremely good performer. We were friends. It wasn't unusual for
him. Yeah.
It didn't feel weird.
Yeah.
And he was right. I was so in my head trying to do it right that I was committing way below the scene.
Yeah.
And that had more to do with it than any of my moves. So match energy, I'll tell myself. Participate. That was a side coach that James Eason said to me when I was in a group game. Being the photographer while everybody else was tackling each other.
Yeah.
And he side coached, participate. I think about that moment. The way that note hit me changed. It was like, oh, yeah, get in there. Don't be the observer.
Yeah. That's great.
Those are two.
All right. Well, let's get you out of here. Any plugs, things that you want to share with the world?
Go read my Twitter feed, everybody. Will Hines, Willhines.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on the Smokes every Monday, 6:30, and your fucked up family every Friday at 9:30.
Were you behind that fake Twitter feed?
Nope.
Okay.
Great. Which one? Maybe I know who it was.
There was the one that was like, it was like your name but flipped.
Oh, Heaven Kynes?
Heaven Kynes. Oh, no, that was Heaven Kynes. That's right. That's not your
name.
That's
my brother's name flipped, and Sean Clements was behind that.
Great.
That's
very funny.
One of the funniest.
It's very funny.
I also plug Heaven Kynes. It's just an incredibly filthy, overly super sexual, depraved Twitter feed.
It was one of the
funniest. For some reason, with a picture of my brother who had nothing to do with it. People in New York love my brother. They love my brother, and they love attributing things to him. Joe Wengert named his cat after my brother.
Yeah.
Joe Wengert's cat's name is Kevin Hines. And Joe Wengert just did a Comedy Central half-hour special with a whole bit about his cat. He's like, I have my cat, Kevin Hines, and it's my brother's name. And he never explains why he named his cat a person's name, never addresses it. It's super weird. And then Sean Clements begins a fake Twitter feed called Heaven Kynes, which
is hilarious. It's one of the funniest Twitter feeds. It was like very early on when I got on Twitter. I was like, what is this? This is perfect. It's been dead for 6 years. I still go back sometimes and
read
it.
Too. It's very so funny.
All right, great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate
it. It's a great podcast. I'm glad to be on it. Bye.
Do you like talking about things you're not qualified to talk about? Us too. The Dumb Nerds Podcast, a show where comedians talk about smart topics they're too dumb for. Every week, your host, that's me, Cassie Jerkins, invites a new funny guest on to get down and nerdy. Laugh and learn about topics like how to buy a house, the Terminator movies, and the Titanic. Check out Dumb Nerds today on your favorite podcast app.